Hi, my name is Lisa Davis. Welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. Joining us today is Brian S. Boxer-Wachler, MD, a world-renowned ophthalmologist, nationally and internationally admired for his expertise in keratoconosis treatments, LASIK, and other vision correction procedures. Dr. Boxer-Wachler was named one of America's top doctors by Castle Connolly this year. He founded the Boxer-Wachler Vision Institute in Beverly Hills, California, to further research into new vision correction procedures and provide patients with the most advanced vision care treatments. He has served on the board of medical directors of a nonprofit keratoconosis, I'm sure that'll be correct, foundation.
And keratoconus.
I'm putting all these extra syllables in. All right, say that
feel
for
free.
Me. Say that for me again.
Keratoconus. Keratoconus.
Oh, keratoconus. Oh, much better. Foundation, and was chairman of the Communications Committee for the Internal Society of Refractive Surgery. Because of his experience, he is routinely invited to lecture worldwide on the latest advances in
keratoconus. Don't worry, I had flashcards to get it right myself.
I'm usually very good at this. Safely in refractive surgery and other new refractive surgery innovations. He has published over 65 peer-reviewed articles and book chapters in his field and is widely regarded as one of the world's best eye surgeons. Dr. Boxer-Wachler, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
It's a pleasure to be here. Pleasure,
Lisa.
Thank
you so much. Now, I'm not even going to attempt to try that word again, but I'd like to know, and I'm sure our listeners would like to know, what is that?
Keratoconus is an eye disease. So imagine if you're driving your car. This is the best way to understand it. So imagine if you're driving your car and suddenly the windshield starts bulging out and you start getting glare off of lights at night and taillights and double vision and streaking of lights. And obviously that's going to be very disturbing and make it pretty difficult to function and to drive. Well, that's what happens on the cornea, which is the outer lens of the eye. It's weak and it bulges out. It's literally, Lisa, like having a hernia on your eye that causes all these distortions in vision.
What causes that?
The cause is just like a hernia, like in the groin, where there's an area that's weak and it bulges because of the weakened area. It's the same in the cornea of the eye, the lens, the outer lens, where the collagen fibers are responsible for the strength of the cornea. And when the collagen gets weakened, it can't hold the shape and it bulges out. And that's what causes these distortions in the lens.
Now, is that something that happens just from getting older, or are some people born with less collagen or weaker structures to begin with?
Great question. Nobody is born with keratoconus. It's something that develops over time. Most patients are probably between, you know, the ages of, you know, 20 and 30, but definitely we've seen it. The youngest patient we've treated was actually 10 years old, and the oldest patient was in his 70s. So it runs the whole range, and it's something that does develop, and it's much more common now than we thought. The old statistics was about 1 in 2,000 people. Now it's actually 1 in 500. So it's actually much more common than was originally thought.
Wow. Does anyone have any idea why that is?
Well, what happens is that just like the whole body, every tissue in the body has this balance between antioxidant enzymes that help protect the tissues from damaging free radicals. With the cornea, what happens is there is a deficiency in these good, you know, protective antioxidant enzymes. And so as a result, it's almost like, you know, there's no troops there to prevent, you know, and guard the fort. So the free radicals, you know, come and they invade and they start damaging the fort, like breaking the walls down. And that's what causes this weakening and hence the bulging and all these distortions, double vision, streaking of lights, triple vision, et cetera.
So can people use food to help the healing process, or, you know, once they have treatment and, you know, for antioxidant-rich foods?
Yeah, I mean, boy, I'll tell you, I mean, it would be great if people could just load up on oral antioxidant supplements and vitamins, and then that would translate into getting into the cornea. But unfortunately, that just, it doesn't happen. There's just a disconnect between what you take orally, what's absorbed, and getting those into the cornea, at least in a sufficient amount to actually stop things from getting worse. So
tell me about carrots then. You know, you've always heard, and my dad's an ophthalmologist, you know, that carrots are good for your eyes. Now, is there something to that, or that's a completely separate good for your eyes issue?
Well, you know, the reason why carrots are good for you is because they have vitamin A. And we actually know, you know, that people who are deficient in vitamin A can have the back part of the eye called the retina develop a lot of problems. So as long as people are eating a normal, healthy diet, they're getting enough vitamin A. So that's the role with the, you know, how it is with the eyes. So, but eating too much vitamin A won't really make your vision better. It'll make your skin turn orange. It will.
That's happened to me. I used to drink a lot of carrot juice. I've cut back considerably.
Yeah. Really, so you get that fake tan look going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Not the most flattering. So tell us about the surgery that you do for the keratoconus.
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 You're going to get it right by the end of the interview. I know it.
I'm a smart girl. I don't know what is going on.
Yeah. Well, you know, don't let your dad listen to this interview because, you know,
Oh, and he's
you may not be coming back for Thanksgiving this year.
Yeah, really.
You'll be like, Lisa, I can't believe you didn't get this.
You messed it up every single time. Couldn't you get it right once?
Well, you know, the way that we treat keratoconus is, I mean, let me just back up even. Let's rewind for a second.
Sure.
The traditional treatment for keratoconus was an invasive and painful cornea transplant, where they take the old cornea that's been damaged off surgically and they replace it with a new cornea that comes from a donor. And that was the traditional treatment. And if people weren't advanced enough, then they were basically just stuck into hard contact lenses by their eye doctors, which, you know, can work certainly in some patients, but oftentimes they're really uncomfortable. It's like having, you know, boulders in the eyes, as patients describe a lot of times. So those are the traditional treatments. I mean, nothing that was very user-friendly on a wide scale. Well, you know, over 10 years ago, you know, I sort of made the commitment that I was going to really, you know, dedicate a good part of my career and my research efforts to finding better treatments, better, more effective, more patient-friendly, with less downtime and safer. And so we started working with originally implants in the cornea to help reshape the cornea, and that was a huge, huge breakthrough because we started at that point now to take people who were on the list for cornea transplants and save them from having to have an invasive cornea transplant. And that was really big, and that was actually over 10 years ago. Placing these little tiny inserts, now we're down to, you know, under 10 minutes. It's essentially, you know, comfortable procedure, really not much pain, if there's any discomfort at all to speak of, maybe a little pressure to do these implants. And that was good, but the only limitation there was that we still had the issue that the cornea was weak. We were reshaping the cornea with these implants in the cornea, and, you know, people don't feel them, by the way. It's almost like when you get a dental filling with the cavity. I mean, you know, everyone that's had that, technically they're walking around with implants in their teeth, mind you, but they're, you know, walking around with these little implants, and they really don't feel them. That's essentially the same with intacts, too, because the way they go below the surface of the cornea, you really can't feel them. So, you know, great, wonderful breakthrough procedure for these patients. The problem, though, goes back to, well, the collagen was still weak, and if somebody was, you know, having these progressive changes, the intacts would turn the clock back. They'd rewind the hand of the clock, but the clock still kept ticking, and they kept, you know, still losing ground. So then I felt like, well, we have to do something to make a user-friendly treatment to strengthen the cornea and actually address the root cause of keratoconus. And so that's when I developed the C3R procedure. And actually, it's renamed in the honor of Steve Holcomb, our U.S. bobsledder who won the gold medal in the Olympics last February in Vancouver this year in 2010. We named it Holcomb C3R, but the way this procedure, you know, was developed was to strengthen these fibers, these collagen fibers, almost like reinforcing, you know, a building that's tipping over because the steel beams are weak, and we developed this way of doing it essentially non-invasively to stop keratoconus in its tracks, like dead in its tracks.
Well, that's great. Now, how was Steve's vision before you were able to do the procedure?
You know, Steve, by the way, he's got to be one of the nicest people that you would ever meet. And he's so down to earth and so humble, you would never know that he's, you know, the world champion and Olympic gold medalist.
Wow.
And when I first met Steve, he was, you know, basically, you know, on the brink of retiring from the sport because his vision had deteriorated so bad from the keratoconus. And, you know, doctors were telling him, well, you have, the only thing that you can, you know, have that's going to help you is a cornea transplant. And a cornea transplant was really not a viable solution for him because, you know, when you're in a bobsled, you know, we really don't get a sense of what goes on just watching it. I mean, we know it goes fast, but I think it was best described to me as, imagine you're in a bag of peanuts and somebody's just shaking that bag back and forth. That's what it's like being in a bobsled. It's a really violent experience.
Yes, it seems like it.
And so having a transplant with that, you know, where he'd have in his sport is just not an option for him to continue, let alone the fact that the recovery would take, you know, between two eyes, you know, a year to 2 years. So either way, a transplant doesn't help him come out of retirement. So his, you know, doctor, his team doctor, Scott Stoll, you know, really kind of said, you know, and he himself used to be a bobsledder himself, Dr. Stoll, he said, I'm going to do research and I'm going to find there's got to be something else out there. There's just got to be something else that can help you and get you back into the sport. Because at the time, Steve Holcomb was the U.S. Bobsled and Skeleton Federation's best hope of getting a gold medal in the men's bobsled, which in four-man they hadn't won a gold medal in 62 years. So they didn't want to just, like, let Steve, you know, retire and just disappear. So that's when Dr. Stoll, you know, was doing a lot of research and a lot of due diligence and checking with other doctors and finally found his way to, essentially, to me.
Oh,
and that's sort of how we, you know, met Steve. And at the time, you know, his vision obviously, you know, was, I think, offhand, it was, I mean, he was legally blind. I don't recall the exact numbers, you know, probably like 20.
But definitely, it was very challenging.
He wasn't, yeah, I mean, let alone to drive a bobsled, I mean, just to sort of, you can imagine what that vision would be like trying to live with. And, you know, certainly he felt like he wasn't safe and didn't want to jeopardize the safety of three other teammates behind him if something would happen. And obviously, you know, there was a real serious tragedy that happened with that luxure.
Oh, that was so sad. I was thinking about that.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously that was very tragic, but it highlights how dangerous this, you know, bobsled and luge is. Anybody who's going down that track, you know, it's very dangerous.
Yeah, you need
to
see.
you need to see, and, you know, that was the stage when Steve came in, you know, to see me.
Now, how soon after were you able to perform the procedure, and then how soon after was he able to, you know, see more clearly?
Well, we took it in two stages with Steve. The first stage was we needed to deal with the keratoconus, and we did that with the procedure that's now called the Holcomb C3R.
Okay.
That was the vitamin application. Actually, I probably should spend a second talking about that, describing what that is. So that is the non-invasive treatment where we do this vitamin application, a special type of riboflavin in a special type of solution to the eye, to the corneas, and we shine a special type of light. And what's been shown and proven is that the interaction of these drops and the light is what transforms the collagen fibers to getting strong again, like reinforcing the beams of the building, like I mentioned earlier.
Yes.
And it's a half an hour procedure. It's essentially really non-invasive. It's non-surgical. And the recovery of patients being able to resume their routine is by the next morning.
Well, that is incredible.
So that was how we dealt with his keratoconus. Now, Steve also had a prescription of being nearsighted. And so then we came back 3 months later with the insertable contact lens, which is about a 10-minute procedure per eye. And that's what then did the final completion of his vision restoration and rehabilitation. And by the next day, he was seeing, I think, like 20/20 after that. And instantly, he's like, I'm coming out of retirement. I'm getting back in that bobsled, and we're gonna get a gold medal.
And how good must that have felt for you and for him? I mean, what an exciting time.
Well, I was up in Vancouver with my family, and, you know, I'm such a big supporter of Steve and the team. We were up there at the track and, you know, watching, you know, the 2 days, because it was, you know, over 2 days of racing. And, you know, that they were the very last race in the second day. And as they crossed the finish line and they had secured the gold, I was just overcome with emotion. You know, I was like, you know, tearing, like, you know, a fire hydrant going off.
Oh, I'm sure.
And, you know, because I just knew how much, you know, it had meant for Steve, and this was really like the comeback of the century in a way. You know, when you talk of, you know, comebacks in sports, I mean, this has got to be up there, you know, with the best of the best of the comebacks.
That's incredible.
So, and, you know, for me personally, it was... I was very, very happy for Steve, very excited for Steve. And, you know, people ask me, you know, kind of like you about, you know, how do I feel about my role? And to me, it's just, it was very humbling to have been able to play, you know, one part in this process, because, I mean, there's certainly other people that, you know, are part of that whole process making that happen. You know, including even, you know, Jeffrey Bodine, who, you know, they're the people who designed the bobsled and have really incorporated a lot of really advanced, technology in the bobsled. And, you know, the coaches, you know, Brian Schirmer, the coach, and, you know, I mean, obviously the other three people on his team. So there's, you know, so many people that are involved in that process. You know, it's truly a team effort, and it was very humbling to, you know, been a part of that process.
Yeah,
me.
You know, there was something that you mentioned about the insertion of the contact that is that a permanent kind of situation? I'm trying to picture, is that something that, tell us about that.
Yeah. I mean, essentially it's like an implantable lens that doesn't require any maintenance, which is different than your traditional contact lens they have to take out and clean and deal with.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, I mean, this is a lens. You know, we've been doing it for many years.
I never knew that.
And, you know, if people are interested, they can actually watch. We have a video of when I did it on another patient who is a sports broadcaster, actually, just coincidentally, on NBC's Today show. And they show kind of the whole process live.
Oh.
So if people are interested, they can visit our website, which is ICL, like letter I, CL, letter C, and then L, information.com, ICLinformation.com, has information about the insertable lens. They could actually watch it, you know, when we
yes,
do it on the
Today I definitely
show.
Want to. Now, I have a personal question. Both my husband and I have astigmatism, and I'm told that LASIK doesn't really work for that, because my husband really wants to wear contacts. He has an appointment soon with his optometrist, but I was just curious if that's true, what I've heard.
Well, you know, unfortunately, because when LASIK was first FDA approved many, many years ago, the original laser did not correct astigmatism. So when people went in and their doctor said, well, you can't have LASIK because you have astigmatism, it only treats just pure nearsightedness, that's somehow still out there and stuck. I mean,
so it's different now.
Yeah. It's been different for many, many years, you know. So people that, you know, have astigmatism that are listening, you know, across the country, you should know that you can have LASIK. LASIK corrects astigmatism. You just have to go in and get checked by your eye doctor to confirm you're a candidate, because there's other parameters that are very, very important to determine if somebody's a candidate or not for LASIK. But having astigmatism, that's something that gets treated routinely and has been routinely treated with LASIK for years.
Now, for people who aren't familiar, what is astigmatism?
Astigmatism, when we talked about the cornea being that outer lens of the eye, well, imagine that it's shaped a bit like a football versus a basketball, where one area is like more bowed than the other area, like your football. The laces are a little bit steeper in one direction. That's kind of what the cornea is with astigmatism. So it causes blurred vision on top of being nearsighted. So it's like double blurring when you have both nearsightedness and astigmatism.
I just went to, I hadn't been to an optometrist in a long time. My dad won't be too happy about that either, but especially, but I learned the keratoconus, right? Keratoconus.
You're getting closer.
Ah, darn it.
We still have more time. You've got more time.
But at any rate, I was thinking, you know, my eye's twitching a lot. And I thought, she said, well, do you wear reading glasses? Because I read about 4 to 6 books a week. I mean, it's crazy.
Wow, that's amazing.
Well, I'm very devoted. If you come on my show, you wrote a book, I'm reading it cover to cover with notes. I feel like I'm back in graduate school. But anyway, so my eye was twitching, and she said, well, she tested my vision. She's like, oh, my gosh. I mean, I could barely see out of my right eye. No idea. Been wearing my reading glasses, and I've got my distance glasses, and it's so much better. And I don't mind glasses, but my husband said, you know, I'd really like to try the contact lens. The other question I have about LASIK is that I'm told that it can lead to dry eye. Is that still true, or is that, again, something that was with maybe one of the older lasers?
It's pretty uncommon. It can happen.
Okay.
So one of the probably more important things is when somebody's getting tested for LASIK is they should be tested to see if they have dry eyes, because people who have dry eyes to begin with might be at higher risk of getting dry eyes after LASIK.
And if somebody's thinking about getting LASIK, what should they look for in the – is it an ophthalmologist who performs it, or is there
– It is an ophthalmologist, an eye surgeon who performs it.
Okay.
Probably the most important is really reputation of the surgeon in the community and experience.
Okay.
So, and, you know, probably they're going to expect to pay a higher fee because, you know, the better, more experienced LASIK surgeons, you know, their fees are going to be higher because they are not looking to, you know, have like a mill, like running people through like a mill.
Exactly.
You know, like discount LASIK.
Yes.
I mean, you know, LASIK. McDonald's is fine for hamburgers, but not McLASIK is not good for
your
eye.
No, you don't want to do. Did you ever watch the show The King of Queens with Kevin James and Leah Remini?
There was an episode where he had LASIK.
Oh my gosh, it was so
funny.
Well, she had this great place all set up in Manhattan, and he got in the mail some coupon for the type of place you're talking about.
Yeah.
So he took her there and said it would be fine, and she couldn't – it was horrible, like the outcome. She's like, why didn't you just let me get it done in Manhattan? It was really funny.
Sorry. Right. Versus like in the alley?
Yeah, basically. You know,
well, I mean, it's like that with anything in medicine.
Of course.
I mean, people – I always advocate people really need to seek out, you know, the best medical care, you know, that they can. It's just, you know, so important. I mean, especially with your eyes. I mean, you don't want to save, you know, a couple hundred dollars on your eyes.
It's true.
You know, the most important of all senses.
I agree.
That's not where you want to start, you know, cutting corners.
No, it's not. And, you know, what's interesting is my best friend, he was born with a congenital condition. I wish I could remember the name of it. But he doesn't have an iris. That's part of it. But then he also... his corneas get, I don't know if they get weak, but all I know is that everyone in his family needs to get these corneal transplants. Well, his vision, he was practically blind. He had stem cells implanted in his eyes with the corneal transplant, and now he can see. I mean, it's still blurry from time to time, but it's pretty amazing. Have you used that or heard of that, using stem cells for things like that?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, that whole area of stem cell treatment for eye or even medical problems is extremely exciting. And there's for macular degeneration, there are studies that have been going on and some clinical trials that will be starting of injecting stem cells into the retina, for example, to help restore vision in people who have had vision loss from macular degeneration. So there's a lot of these applications, I think, that in the next, you know, 20 years that, you know, hopefully will be, you know, in practice at that point.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. I mean, he hadn't worked for a long time. Now he works, has a good job, and it's amazing. It's completely changed his life. So there's two more things I want to ask you.
And, example of how somebody, like, made this comeback in their life is what we do on an almost daily basis with patients with keratoconus. Because, you know, these are a lot of times people, you know, have experienced these types of problems and they can't, you know, function very well. They had to give up their job, or, you know, somebody wants to qualify to be a firefighter or for the police force, you know, and they can't because of their vision. And then when we can improve their vision and get them back in the swing of things, it's like you, the example of your friend, different condition, but it's like it's life-changing for people.
It really is. Yeah, it's been so huge. I was just so excited, and it's just been so wonderful for him, and I'm such a big advocate of stem cells. And I just, this is wonderful. You know, I'd love to have you come back sometime. There's a couple things I wasn't able to get to, and I'd love to talk about some summer safety eye tips. So maybe you can come back shortly.
Sure.
Still summer.
This has been
really fun. You have the best voice, by the way. Have you done, you can have your own radio show. I mean, you just sound so wonderful.
Well, I don't know. It's in my DNA, I guess.
I guess so.
I've been told I should narrate children's books. I've heard that for many years from patients. Because when I'm doing a procedure, for example, I'm talking to patients, talking them through the procedure, and they're like, you know, your voice is so soothing and calm. You know,
really
you really narrate children's books. I'm like, no, but never
had
the
opportunity. You know what else you could do? What would be great is you can do relaxation tape. Imagine yourself on the beach.
I can get into hypnosis, maybe.
Yeah. You know, actually, by the way, you know what's funny is actually my dad has been doing hypnosis with his patients since the 70s.
Really?
He'll hypnotize them, yep, before a procedure, and it helps them relax. And it's, yeah, he's a really good, and my brother does hypnosis as well. It's interesting. It's actually another interesting topic. Maybe sometime I can interview you both at the same time, and he can tell you about it. But I want to thank you so much. And if you can give us your website again.
Sure. Well, let me give you the website that has the keratoconus information, because this is like the big educational resource that, you know, people have. Just love to learn about all these different procedures. I mean, there's even more procedures that we didn't even talk about for keratoconus.
Yeah, that would be nice. Yeah, I'd love to have you back for that.
But the website is www.keratoconusinserts.com. So K-E-R-A-T like Tom, O, C like cat, O, N like Nancy, U, S like Sam, inserts.com.
Oh, great. Keratoconus. Keratoconus. Yay.
Keratoconus inserts. I knew you'd get it by the end of the show.
Yeah, three times. I'll just go back and I'll edit it in keratoconus. It'll be like louder. So, Dr. Boxer Washer, tell us about keratoconus. No.
I knew. See, now your dad's going to be proud of you.
Yeah, he will. He will.
And by the way,
thank you. Yes.
Oh, sure. I just wanted to mention, though, on the website, too, is the whole Steve Holcomb story.
Oh,
so if people are interested to sort of read about sort of everything that happened in Vancouver, like stuff that you didn't see on the news, because, I mean, the news covered this, you know, very widely. But there's details in there that you didn't get in the news.
Awesome.
So, like, the Steve Holcomb story is sort of on our website, too. And, you know, I mean, I just have to really, again, give Steve so much credit because, you know, he really almost became like the unofficial spokesperson for keratoconus because, you know, his story has educated now worldwide millions and millions of people about these less invasive treatments compared to like the Stone Age treatments of hard contacts only and cornea transplants.
That's so wonderful.
So, yeah, his story has been so inspirational to millions of people and, it's you know, really the story of triumph over adversity at the end of the day, and very powerful. It's very powerful and so inspirational.
Oh, it really is, and the work you do is just so terrific. And if people want to reach me, they can go to itsyourhealthradio.org. I hope everyone has a great day. Keep being healthy. Take care. Bye-bye.